there's more good news about Pennsylvania's breeding program. Last year, the number of state-bred live foals rose by nearly 30%. Many other states saw a drop of between 10 and 20%. This says that Pennsylvania truly has North America's fastest-growing and most lucrative breeding program. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Back at the races, bottom of the hour, and actually the first session that is going on now, Alex Waldrop moderating a sports betting conversation, and Keith Shamblin just dropped off some added remarks that I guess Alex included in response to Orrin Hatch, who I guess is still alive, and although you can't tell to look at him, and the he's put out obviously because he's the one who stopped sports betting from moving forward 40 years ago, and so in his last moments as a legislator, he's going to try to quash the sports betting again at somebody's behest. Obviously, he certainly. Certainly.
Well, you owe someone, Steve.
Yeah, exactly. And so, Alex, I know I'm sure there'll be, Alex suggesting that the NFL actually is most likely the culprit. And
so Mitt Romney, his replacement, Orrin Hatch.
Well,
Mitt gets around.
Well, it's good for him, actually. And. You old enough to remember his father?
No, just the stories. George, right? From Michigan?
George Romney.
Yeah.
You bet. Interesting. Interesting. Well, Orrin Hatch, I guess, in the spirit of the NFL, trying to give a concussion to sports betting.
Yeah. Well, there's no lack of news on the topic, Steve. And... You know, there certainly seems to be some cottage industries that have kind of blossomed. There's some great Twitter accounts to follow. Legal Sports Report, I think, is one, and Dustin Galker and the ESPN folks are following it very well. Chris Parnum, I think it is. There is no lack of news on the topic, and it keeps everyone, I think, fairly engaged on what's happening because it is evolving at such an absolutely lightning pace. And, you know, that... It's obviously a topic here at the symposium, but I tend to think, to some degree, that some of the questions that are being asked amongst the racing community aren't necessarily accurate or aren't the right questions that are being asked. I mean, my take on the topic relatively is that what is racing doing to compete with this product? What are we doing to make our product as competitive as possible in light of a cheaper, more widely distributed, more widespread interest in sports than what we have in racing, and how are we going to respond to that? I think that's really where racing needs to focus, not on what we're going to get out of it, but how are we going to compete with it. And if we do a couple things, I think we'll have a chance. Okay, but we need to make some changes to our existing product line and certainly the pricing of the racing product.
And in fact, even though the title of our session isn't directly tied, it does kind of fit in with the theme of today. In fact, you're going to be on a subsequent panel after we conclude with ours this morning later, one that also is complementary to this topic. As I said to Chris Larmy too, the title and the way that this session is even, you know, is even being, you know, laid out there, the value of the core product, the value is implicit. It's vital. It's everything that we're about. Talk about your approach to this topic.
I said straight up in the slides that I'll present this morning, but it is the single most important thing that racing needs to do. It needs to value its core players. It needs to value its customers, the people it already has. There's plenty of focus in this industry about getting new players, but if you can't retain the ones you have, if you can't offer them a competitive, well-priced product, then the future is definitely not as bright as the past was. So I'm firmly of the opinion that there are some things that need to change, and you know, our organization and what we're trying to do with Thoroughbred Idea Foundation is identify some of these topics, and we're trying to tell the stories of the four main things racing needs to do by using some conduit topics, and breakage is one of them. We talk about breakage because we want to highlight the pricing of racing's product. Pricing is askew. It needs to get in better kind of symmetry with the rest of the wagering industry. And if we need to price our products better, we need greater transparency. So talking about the stewarding and the rules category, and it's all part and parcel of a much greater communications infrastructure between the stewards and the public. And we had the discussion 2 weeks ago about the kind of the knee-jerk reaction to people suggesting a conspiracy theory type approach to stewarding, that the Churchill stewards thought that they thought we're going to take these two horses down, there's going to be a jackpot carryover into the next day, and that's a good thing for us. And I completely reject the concept. But the fact that there are fans, that there are customers that think that almost immediately is a suggestion that something is wrong, that we need to change the perception. We need people to be more confident in the sport, and we need to do things to build that confidence. And I'll talk about that in the stewarding session, kind of a consistency and transparency. But it's pricing, it's transparency, it's access to more information, better data. You know, in our kind of role, we've put ourselves out there and certainly asked plenty of people to engage us. And we had some professional bettors reach out to us. And they said, Pat, we have access to the data. We're looking at the data. And we wanted to look into one particular function. We wanted to look at the charts. And we wanted to see particular words that were used by the chart callers. We wanted to see if that would indicate maybe a particular type of performance. So the word they were searching for was prevailed. That if a chart caller used the word prevailed in the short comment, that was indicative of a horse that had a really hard race. And that they wanted to build in as part of their algorithm to tell their system, don't bet horses next up if the previous race the chart caller had used the word prevailed. So this is just one function of a much larger kind of betting algorithm that they were using. But in their research, they said that they found 66 instances, 66 different iterations of the term bumped start. And that's, you know, NIRIS chart callers say one thing, and Penn National says another, and Arlington says something else, and Sunland says something else. That there's all these different ways to say it. And the point that they were trying to make to us is, we'd love to have greater access to the data, but the data as it exists is a little clumsy. That it needs a lot of work, and that if we are to get to a point in the future where racing's data is a little more accessible, a little more available, maybe less expensive than it is right now, that it needs to be cleaned up. And there needs to be some standard usage across the board. So greater access to more data and cleaner data. And then racing needs better product development. And, you know, there's three or four sessions here over 2 days about sports betting. They're very competitive. And as someone said the other day, I think the average NFL game has about 150 different markets within it on different, you know, number of receptions, over-unders, totals, quarter scores, etc. And in horse racing, we have had a fairly stale wagering menu. That there have been small additions over time, but that the parimutuel wagering menu has not really evolved enough. And that in an environment where we are having this explosive growth within the industry, that racing needs to compete. And more, better products, and maybe I think we really start need we'll need to have the discussion about fixed odds on racing. And for what it's worth, Australia has done incredibly well with a dual model. And talking to a couple Australians that were here, and just my own base of knowledge from Hong Kong, where I dealt with plenty of them, a robust fixed odds market yields a robust tote market. It's necessary for a fixed odds market to be able to have the tote to lay off and to really you know, it's best for the professionals to have access to both markets, and I think we've been pretty stale in that sense. So there's a lot of opportunity. If you look at racing overall as a, you know, a slightly troubled asset, that if we get some people to come in and really invest in this industry, I think they can buy low at where we are right now and really ride a wave up. But it's going to require those four main topics to be addressed.
It's almost a separate discussion, but I mean, who are the candidates? Out of curiosity, that
for investing,
yeah,
they're out there. I have a couple in mind of some people that our organization has talked to, and I think they are. I think they're going to come from the high trading sphere, the frequent the Wall Street background.
Mm-hmm.
I think they will. There are people that look at racing as very low at the moment, and that there's a chance to buy in at kind of low rates, and you know, with the right degree of investment and opportunity. And racing needs to be open to change. We had that great line in our white paper from the old Racing Form columnist Chuck Connors that the clubhouse set loves change, and if it's the change of, you know, a new way to twist a lemon peel, the clubhouse set would be for it. Well, that was in 1952. And there aren't too many people that seem that, you know, change is a dirty word. And a lot of people are kind of set in their ways. We need to get past that. But I do think there's opportunity. I have to be optimistic. You know, we're trying to bring about change, too, and keeping after it. I don't know if I heard a lot of change suggested yesterday, to be honest, in the sessions. There's a lot of case studies about what people are doing, but I think today we'll hear a little bit more urgency in some of these sessions from some of the speakers. Certainly for myself.
Focused back on the core topic and the, you know, servicing the existing player and satisfying, you know, their needs and basically if we can get industry and basically track management to acknowledge that it's going to be a requirement immediately. I mean, if they aren't doing it, or at least have an inkling that servicing their player base is going to be more important than ever.
Yeah.
What tools do we have, or what challenges balance out that equation, and, you know, what is at our disposal that could be very quickly enhanced? Chris and I touched on a lot of this. You heard maybe bits and pieces, but I'm curious if you've got a and you gave the overview, but
yeah.
what can what can tracks do immediately to take care of their customers?
Well, the tracks, I think, need to work with their regulators better to start making some changes and understanding that there are opportunities to better price the sport. In an environment where we're facing maybe early days 10% on sports wagering, that's going to come down, and the cost to 8%, 7%, into 6 and 5 over time, as it gets more widespread. And racing's putting out an average takeout of 20%. It's just not sustainable. It hasn't been, and we've seen that racing simply, I think, just needs to price its products better. We're trying to make that argument through the breakage discussion, okay? That you can drop takeout all you want, but you're not making the place and show pools palatable. You're not giving money back to, I think that if states were to shift to a penny breakage model, it would serve as one of the greatest stimulus packages to horse players ever, okay? And I told you we were going before the Model Rules Committee on Sunday.
That's right.
I would say... I got one of the least favorable introductions in the history of any professional speaking that I've ever done, where I was basically told, I don't really think we can do anything about this, but let's hear the guy out. So I'd say they punted. And so now our focus is mostly going to be on trying to get a state to fall and to make a change. And that state, I think, is going to be New York. New York, I don't think enough players realize it. That the state of New York, first off, is the only state with a liberal breakage policy, and that
Steve Crist
single-handedly in 1994 brought about. And New York, every time a race is run in New York and a payout is under $10, players are getting back far more money than they would get back in any other jurisdiction in this country. And over 25 years, a quarter century, I haven't figured out the number, Steve, but it is countless millions of dollars.
Steve, actually, last year when Steve and Andy received the Eclipse Award of Merit, and we talked about it in the congratulatory visit, and Steve actually had a number.
Well, it's huge. It has to be substantial.
It was enormous.
The biggest problem is that decision, that change, was not dramatic enough for the rest of the states to think that New York was at a competitive advantage. So New York is the only state right now with a liberal breakage policy, and we think that there is a path forward to get New York to go a step farther. And through working with the horsemen's groups, and we'll certainly work with the tracks and the legislators to hopefully bring about some change. Literally, to bring the change back to players. And at that point, I think the rest of the country would have no choice. If you think that...
Well, wait a minute. They do have a choice, because they've had a choice for these 25 years, and they've done nothing.
Yeah, the change wasn't dramatic enough, right?
Then they haven't looked at it. And is that why they don't understand that New York is 20% of the national handle for a reason?
I'd say it's part of it. I'd say that if New York starts paying $258 instead of $240, or instead of $250, which they're paying right now, they're paying $250.
Right.
I think that the rest of the country would at that point think they have to do something about it. That other states, that it would be so friendly to players of New York racing that others would suffer.
I asked this question, did I ask this of you, or did I ask it maybe as a follow-up after your visit on the presentation of the concept by Thoroughbred Ideas? Why couldn't an ADW do it as a bonus and as an incentive and as a business, basically as a marketing, I don't want to say gimmick, but as an incentive.
Yeah, they absolutely could. I think that there are actually some, there have been some discussions. I'm not saying that we've led them, but that people have raised to us after bringing the topic up that there might be some collusion to keep things from happening like that. That people don't want to bring that up. They don't want to change. They don't want to give it back, but you would have to think that if one started doing it, that others would sit up and pay attention. Look, this year we're sitting right now, what, up 3% for the year, roughly, going in the last through three quarters. Handle in America up 3%, which is the largest single rise in the last 20 years, which is great. I think what happened last year with the IRS was a big help to that. But you know, you can't look at the handle figures in North America and say that the decisions that we've been making have been good for the industry. In raw figures, we're down 28% over 15 years. Inflation adjusted, we're down 48%. In no business practice would anyone look at the numbers and say being down 48% over 15 years is healthy or indicative of good decision making. And now we're facing that all in light of a increasingly competitive market for the wagering dollar. And you know, decisions like breakage, proper pricing, takeout, they need to come to the fore, and people need to change. The industry needs to change. It has to be it can't be a dirty word. And I hope we're getting to a breaking point, a tipping point, that will start to happen. But until it does, we're going to keep fighting for it.
What has been, as an aside, what has been, and I can bring this up with you too on stage, what has been the reaction on the, not industry, quote-unquote, side, but specifically racetrack? How many conversations have you and members of the IDEA Foundation, how many have you had with, yep, with track management, and is there a comprehension of the urgency of these topics?
Comprehension of the urgency, I'd say maybe not yet, but receptiveness, willingness to have the discussion, yes. And we had the chat with NYRA, and I spoke with Dave O'Rourke, Chief Revenue Officer, and I think he is engaged to at least look at the numbers a little bit more and see where things stand. And, you know, one of the great dislikes in his position is that NYRA has to get their breakage taxed, but they owe the full amount on their minus pools. And you know, last year they paid out $1.8 million in minus pools. And there is something completely antithetical to the nature of the racetrack being a neutral party in the wagering, in the paramutual sphere. There is something wrong when a percentage of wagers, the house, could owe, you know, that they have to make up a mandatory minimum. Racetracks are not neutral. They have a vested interest in bridge jumpers losing. And that is antithetical to what paramutual wagering is supposed to be. And, you know, the path to getting rid of that, and this has kind of been the force of the discussion, which is, I don't like having to pay out $1.8 million a year in minus pools. And our suggestion is there is a way to get rid of that, and it's going to require the state to understand that they're going to lose some money at the front door, and the horsemen are going to lose some money at the front door, and the tracks are going to lose some money at the front door, but they're going to get it back on the churn.
Right.
And given the result out of the model rules discussion, which did not yield anything substantive, we're going to focus single-handedly on getting New York on board and you know, having that greater discussion and really moving forward. Joe Applebaum from the THA has been incredibly receptive, and very friendly to the, you know, he's very friendly from kind of a bettor's standpoint. He's fully aware of it, and I think we look, we're going to be relentless on this. This is what we're doing. Craig Burnick, frustrated with the state of the industry and things not getting done. Let's create something. Let's push. Let's move forward. Let's get something done. Let's do it for the positive result for all horse players, for owners, for purses, for horsemen. Let's push forward and get it done. And I think we're on that path, and I am more optimistic than not that I think we'll be able to get it done.
More on the player side and the, you know, the customer experience. What's unique about the equation that we face as a business entity is that there's way more than one concern involved in the the player satisfaction level.
Yeah.
There's the bricks and mortar, and then there's the bet-taking entity, and there's also, just looking across it, and I had a conversation with Dan Silver yesterday, there's the entity that's conveying the signal, and there's the tote provider, and so on and so forth. I mean, there are so many layers here, and I would venture to guess that that's somewhat unique, actually, that there's this multi-level delivery that if any element within those tiers goes wrong or inhibits the player's experience, it reflects negatively on every aspect, on every element.
Yeah.
And it's funny, until I just put it that way, that really hadn't occurred to me, that if leg B of the equation trips up, the video bogging down watching a race, that everybody wants to take their phone and smash it. there's a portion of it that takes away from your experience and your satisfaction level as a player, and it has nothing to do with what the racetrack did and the horsemen and even, I think people will assume immediately it's the ADW, but in fact, it's actually where the signal is being delivered, which in this case would be Roberts.
Yeah.
So there's all any number of these things can go wrong, and it reflects poorly in everybody's experience.
It degrades the experience. I actually have a slide in my presentation today where I highlight breakage as B, and I have mostly A through Z of issues that are all interconnected. That,
by the way, I got to ask you a question. You said Zed, and of course, you say things like, nobody puts more international stuff in. Do you put the little cross on your sevens?
I don't.
Thank God, because then I'd really want to bop
my
you.
My ones and sevens are very.
Wow.
Yeah, no.
Okay, I'm just kidding. I'm sorry. I couldn't resist. Breakage B.
Breakage is B. The antiquated tote pipes is A, and workout times that are wrong, and run ups and inaccurate times, and yep. Video streams, and will pays that don't show. You get this. There's a cavalcade of issues, and the one thing I simply cannot tolerate, Steve, is when people say the issue that you're trying to change is not the most important issue. Okay, these are all interconnected issues.
Right,
we
true.
Have to make changes wherever we can. Just because our organization has taken maybe two topics, they might not be the quote-unquote most important one, but a good idea executed today is better than the perfect idea when it's too late. Okay? We have to focus on solving all of the broken windows along the way. Look at Naira, look at Aqueduct. The timing, they put the gate in the wrong place. They blocked the beam. Everything's up in, and horse players feel aggrieved. The data seems askew. Everyone's kind of up in arms. And what really happened there? A guy parked it in the wrong spot and messed stuff up.
The internal. I mean, it's not
But it's just part of
the
overall picture of frustration and things that can go wrong and hurt the long-term player's experience and frustrate them. And it's not all because of a racetrack or a distributor of information. It's there is an interconnectedness. And this actually goes to a greater point that I think, I've kind of come to the realization having come home and, been away from American racing for 3 years. And that is that I don't think American racing takes itself seriously enough. That we need to be a much more professional, serious, focused gambling sport. And I think that, these types of errors don't happen in other places. There are ways to time races better. There are ways to communicate rulings better, to make customers feel as though they are being more respected. I've been trying to understand kind of the root of that, and I think it's that, three, 4 decades ago, we were running 75,000 races in this country. And it was much more disparate than it is today, and things have concentrated, but I don't think we've, as the market has shrunk, I don't think we've stepped up to the plate to be as professional as we could. And I'm not knocking the people that are in the sport. They're just doing their job, but I don't think we've we've taken that step forward to really give our customers the most robust professional infrastructure that this sport deserves. We can. There are ways we can change it. But I think a lot needs to be done, and you know, hopefully we can help inspire that change, help bring it along, help execute it. We're there to help.
One of the things, you know, that you prompted, and I brought this up, a couple of years ago, that I find, I'm assuming that if it bothers me, that bothers other players. The increment reporting, I mean, this has been something that could have been fixed a million years ago. It's crazy. Stop reporting numbers that aren't the appropriate denomination, the increment. This has gotten a little better. There was the time when they were doing $2 superfecta payouts.
Yeah. That no one had.
Yep. I mean, you got it. You can't do that. I mean, you put up a 10-cent and maybe put up a dollar. You're flashing three screens anyway.
Sure.
So two times or three screens with all the mutual options. There's nothing worse. And I've said this a lot. Having a wife that, you know, I met at the mutual bank. Mm-hmm. I meant betting. You don't ever want anybody going up to the window, having seen a $2 exacta payout, and they bet the exacta for a dollar, and they get half of what was put up on the screen. Yeah. They've cashed a ticket. They might be a new player, and they don't understand why they didn't get what they just saw flashed up on the screen. It says $72. Why am I getting $36? And you just had somebody that should have had a positive experience.
Yep.
And now they're walking away from the window dissatisfied because they think somehow they got cheated. And granted, you say to yourself, well, for God's sake, I mean, they should know the difference between a $2 and a dollar. Yes, I get that. But post
lowest common denominator.
The lowest increment,
yeah.
The minimum bet amount, and then if somebody actually went and they put up a 50-cent try payout, and if they go up and it turned out they bet a dollar,
only positive.
they're gonna be jumping for joy. Why did I get this much money?
Yeah.
Oh, because it's a 50-cent payout, and you bet a dollar. Oh my God! instead, we're annoying people.
And the newbie experience, if we fast forward to the more professional experience, the existing player, this conversation was had with the guys from Longitude who are trying to bring about some new technology. They want to start, you know, they want to get involved in American racing, and if they are, their technology will show you will pays for probables for tries, supers, pick fours,
the veils. Yeah.
This can open up. So on one extreme, we're showing new customers numbers that they might not actually receive. On the other extreme, you have people, long term players, even if they're weekend warriors, who don't know what a try is going to pay, and yet we're asking them to invest in some of the most expensive bets in the industry, and yet we can't give them optics on the return.
You can if you play in Chile, South America.
Right.
Take a look at those veils, kids.
Or you get the pool sizes in some of the old harness tracks would show pool sizes in tries. I feel like Northfield was showing them at one point in time that you could see how much was invested in each horse in tries. But it's such a – there are so many broken windows that we can fix. And – you're sitting here on the radio. I'm sitting in my office. We're advocating for it day in and day out. But at the end of the day, it's the people that are in a position to execute it that just need to start making changes. And it's only going to be for the betterment of the sport.
Well, and again, it some of those changes are difficult to execute because they are going to take multiple layers of decision makers that you know you're going to have to make repeated presentations and to bring those you know, weave those elements together.
Change isn't easy.
Yeah,
I get it. I was in, you know, a 22,000 employee racing company for 3 years. I saw the meetings. I saw the structure. It's not easy, but it is possible. It can be done, and it's hard work and sleeve rolling work. And again, if we can inspire some of that and help lead it, help in any way possible, we're there to do it.
Well, Pat, of course, spearheading the Thoroughbred Idea Foundation, and he and Chris Larmy, who've joined me in these first couple of hours. Later, we're going to talk about the same topic on stage and see if we can't, you know, generate some some interest on the audience level as well. That includes certainly includes some decision makers, I would think,
or
influencers. So, Pat, I appreciate
it. Thank you, Steve.
Not
pleasure
at all.
To be in person with you.
Always, yeah. Always. We will take top of the hour, a little past the top of the hour break, and we'll come back. Doug Reed is going to join me. And, of course, Doug, the last time you heard Doug in this same venue, he was winding down his long tenure at the head of the racetrack industry program at University of Arizona. He's working in a consulting role these days, but he sent countless industry participants out to their careers and helped launch them in the directorship capacity here at University of Arizona. We'll catch up with Doug Reed when we come back at the races, at the symposium at Tucson, another hour, and after we do our session, we'll head to California. Second half of the trip out west, the western swing, as it were. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up at ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
There's more good news about Pennsylvania's breeding program. Last year, the number of state-bred live foals rose by nearly 30%. Many other states saw a drop of between 10 and 20%. This says that Pennsylvania truly has North America's fastest-growing and most lucrative breeding program. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the 5 Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.